Today on Rockin' the Suburbs,
we wrap up our interview with Dave Bilanco from Marah.
But rest assured, folks, he's still out there talking somewhere.
Okay, so, Patrick.
Jim.
When did you get into Marah?
You know, it's interesting. I got into Marah when I was working for the Washington Post as a music reviewer. I would write a couple live reviews a month, and they assigned me to go see the band at Iota in Arlington, a very small club right there on Clarendon Boulevard or some such that runs through the heart of the Clarendon area.
Right.
And by the second or third song, Dave was up on the bar playing guitar, sort of kicking people's drinks over accidentally, but just kind of kicking out a solo, doing like a Chuck Berry duck walk or something. And I knew this is a special band. But during my research, I had learned that they were loved by many interesting people, including some famous authors and some others who really had a stake in rock and roll, and also got published in big places. So I knew this was kind of an important band, yet it was cool to see them at such a small venue with maybe, 60, 70 people in the room.
I think one of the great things about Marah, I've seen them live twice, but both times at Jam and Java here in Virginia.
One of their main places.
I mean, I think one of the great things, and I would encourage listeners to find them when they're on tour, is they tend to play small venues because that's, the nature of, that's the reality of where they are in terms of the landscape. But they put on a show as if they're playing to an arena.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, it is
2.5 hour sets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great stuff. I got into the band when they released the album 20,000 Streets Under the Sky, which was 2004.
Yep. Very good album.
And I'm going to give credit here to our friend Dan Reed.
Okay.
Who is now on the Dan and Dan Music Podcast, but back then he was the music director at a public radio station in Louisville where I lived, and he would program really cool music on this station, and they played the song Freedom Park.
Oh, what a song. What a classic rock and roll song.
Freedom Park is one of those songs that when you hear it, you have to hear it about 10 more times.
Yes, you do.
It's really that great of a song.
If you think you've heard the phrase shimmy, shimmy, coco bop, no, you haven't until you've heard Freedom Park.
It's so great. It's got this awesome wall of sound, kind of Phil Spector-ish production to it.
Great song.
And it just rocks. It's really, really good. Yep. So from that moment on, I went out and bought that on CD. And from that moment on, I was a Marah fan.
Fantastic.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay. So why don't we get to the last part of this interview? What you're going to hear from Dave is that... Patrick and I aren't the only fans of this band.
Not at all.
There's some people who, are kind of big deals who like Marah. You guys have had some pretty famous fans over the course of your career.
Yeah, we have. I know. Famous fans. That could be a whole blog podcast in itself.
There's a book in there somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's cool. I mean, it's very cool to connect, to make a real connection to someone that you look up to like that. And in our case, it's been these people that we really personally looked up to, we got a letter from Stephen King. It was like the coolest thing ever.
Right.
It's in my brother's house. And he was so super cool. And he's like, your record is super cool. You know, he's like, but I'm not. His attitude was he wasn't going to inflate us anymore. He's like, because the other really cool record this year is Kid Rock. And if you don't like that, you're an idiot. You know, straight up. That was kind of his vibe, which is so funny in Stephen King. But yeah. I absolutely adore his books. You know, I've read them since I was in ninth grade. And I buy them the week they come out. I never met him. There's a part of me that, you know, I really want to believe he exists. He's Stephen King, and it's so iconic.
That's right.
So big. But yeah, to me, it really doesn't get cooler than that. But whatever, Bruce Springsteen and tons of awesome writers have rallied around our band and said, hey, what you're writing is good. Nothing could be more validating and should have inspired us to work harder and stuff. But again, you're fighting your own internal thing. And those people that are operating on that level where they are putting themselves out there to criticism and stuff, they understand us maybe a little bit better. And you guys are doing it. You know, you're putting yourself out there. And a lot of people don't understand that. It becomes just very effortless entertainment, listening to other people complain or whatever we're doing right now.
You could easily do that.
But your neck is out there, and those people that when they...
It's a certain bravery.
Right. Yeah. When those brave people say, you're brave, there's nothing better than that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, I would imagine as a musician, but probably even more so as a songwriter, mm-hmm. when you hear Springsteen likes your music, what's the reaction to that?
I've been writing songs for Bruce for years now. He doesn't tell anybody. But no, I mean, it's amazing. But our Bruce thing was way more personal. It was way more at an after party getting bum rushed by Bruce Springsteen, who's very excited to talk to Marat. That's a weird way to meet the dude.
Yes. You know?
Yeah. So that's how we met him. But immediately, beyond immediately, it's apparent who he is. Like, oh my God, you are that dude. You know, it would be so disappointing for me probably to meet Sting. You know what I'm saying? Because he's probably a lot like I think he is.
Yeah.
But Bruce Springsteen happens to maybe be the person you want him to be, which I don't even know how that works out.
Seems bizarre.
He's like a superhero, right? So like you write to him and he writes back to you. But he's on tour. You know what I mean? It's like, so he's got time. And he has an idea of the people that deserve his time maybe or something. And he does not let you down. Amazing lesson to be learned just right there. But Bruce was somebody that saw something in us. Maybe it was the age difference between me and my brother and his kids. Maybe it was something, you know what I mean? It might have been something else. It was certainly the bells at the top and the banjos and the wall of it.
Yeah.
Of course he would hear the Ronettes coming through our music or Phil Spector or the Mummers Parade. Of course he would, and recognize that we were writing in an East Coast thread that he might have thought, oh, I thought that was done, you know, at that point in time. So, of course, there was a real connection. Were we ever really able to talk to this level? Well, we've had dinner together and stuff, but no. I mean, he gets to the point where he'll tell you, I had 175 mixes of Crush on You. And that's f***ed up, dude. Yeah. That's a lot of mixes. And you understand how very much he's giving, you know.
Yeah.
And that in itself is a gift to people like us to, you don't feel quite so lost in the woods or whatever. So it was a huge thing he did for us. Just getting you through another year, you know, you can power yourself on that. Like, wow, I feel connected to somebody who, I mean, Bruce came from a very different time and he came from a very different music business and he's very clear with you on that. And I very much remember, he's like, if I were you guys, I don't know what I'd do. You know, straight up like that. Like, and we all just have to laugh because that's exactly what you would do. I have no idea. But to know how much he's means to people all over the world and has given back to rock and roll. When we lose him, we will lose the best white rock and roll performer on earth. That's a crazy idea. So you take it for granted, but he's out there somewhere tonight, and that engine inside him is one that should be studied. You know,
it's without real. A doubt. It's
real.
He should be taken apart and looked at.
Yes. Right. Yeah. Don't tell him that. Right. We'll do it.
Hey, Patrick, one of the things I really need in life is validation.
Sure. I can relate to that, Jim.
So please, if you like Rockin' the Suburbs, you listen on iTunes, please, you know, give us a rating and a review. It's really easy to do. You've done that before, right?
I've done it pretty easy. You log in, you rate, you subscribe, and you review.
Right. So those ratings that people give, they're like up to 5 stars.
5 stars.
There might be an option for our show to go
higher than that. 5 stars.
And then
5 stars.
A review, you could actually write a little thing about how much you like the show.
5 stars.
And what that does is it sort of like elevates the profile of the show, and then other people
5 stars
discover it. And
5 stars.
That's good for the show and keeps us going.
5 stars.
Right?
So 5 stars.
What should people do?
5 stars.
And how do they do that?
iTunes. Rate. Review. 5 stars.
Yeah. Please do that. Rockin' the Suburbs.
5 stars. It's been wonderful to sit here and talk with you. And we could probably sit here and talk until...
I think we probably could.
We could.
So far...
I do want to ask one last question, though, because you're talking about really connecting with the fans who get what you're doing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Would you be able to do what you do if you were playing venues like the Foo Fighters play, stuff like that?
Yeah, dude, I honestly wouldn't even know. I wouldn't know anymore. I mean, I've done it long enough that I don't look at the crowd anyway. I don't even know they're there. I'm clocking the band, and yes, absolutely, we would be able to level them, and they would see things in our band that they never saw in the Foos, you know, and they never will. But they're, you know, they're a cool thing, whatever, an appendage to other things, and plugged into business in a million ways. I reckon they're still playing at some level rock and roll, I guess so.
Right.
I mean, I never saw them, but yeah, it can go pretty high. I mean, Green Day took it really, really high, you know, playing drums and basses and Les Paul Juniors. It's great. It's great. There's something else too, you know. I don't know what I looked at the past to try to find those parallels, you know, because they all exist. I don't know what Green Day would be to Johnny Burnett or some slightly more Duane Eddy or something. I don't know what the you know, but there is place for both of those things.
Right.
And you know, at the end of the day, the guys in Green Day go back to their hotel and they listen to Johnny Burnett and Duane Eddy, you know,
right.
Because that's, you know, those people on the low road are there to support the bigger thing. I want nothing to do with it, honestly. I would like to play to 1,000 people.
Well, that's
that
what I'm saying.
Understand
like,
what's
do you,
going on.
Yeah. Do you, I mean, do you feel like there would be something missing in a way by playing in these big venues?
Yeah, again, going back to Rod and the Paul Westerberg and all, we'd sabotage it if it became a runaway train. Of course we would. If we had a hit song, it would be retarded. We would have to kibosh it.
Well,
or channel it some other way, or just absolutely not play that song, you know?
That's right.
You know, because the song might be great, but we were pursuing something else, and we'll give you all of the sweat and blood and all that every night, but we will not go there. I don't think we'd be able to be your vision of what it's supposed to be, because, you know, that's fair. It's a fair shake.
Well, Westerberg said that if they had a hit song, nobody would really care about them today the way that they do.
It would
have
ruined it in so many ways.
Now they have
25 hit songs, you know,
that's
songs
right.
that are just, you know, that's, they are the dressing room walls of a million nightclubs in America that are going out of business. They are the anthems of a horrible, beautiful time, you know, an aimless time, a rockless time where, it's so deep. Again, we should do another podcast.
All right. Next time you're connected in town, or we'll come up to Philly. How about that?
That sounds like a good thing. All right. We'll do a month long project.
Yeah. You guys are good at this. This is a
pull
really
the threads
cool
of America
I'm
apart
proud.
For us.
I'm proud.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks.
Peace.
Well, thank you, Dave, very, very much. We appreciate it.
This evening, pigeons turn a bars of gold. Sun's least light. And across the river Camden is a gilded kingdom on the verge of night. Alright. And so pause here at the edge of the city.
Okay, and that's it. But you can hear the full interview at suburbspod.com, right?
Yeah, go to suburbspod.com. You can hear everything, warts and all, as we said. Yeah. And you can hear Dave ramble on, us ramble on, and just understand what we do to get an interview like this and how fun it is to sit down and just sort of ask any questions with no limits.
It was great. I mean,
yeah,
he spent like an hour with us.
Oh, yeah, it was great.
And anyone who has dabbled at all in any kind of audio production might know that the concept of the sound wave, or what the sound wave is, right? Where you see it visually, where you can see where, you know, the sound actually occurs. And when we record, we have a little great little portable recorder that does multi-track recording. Yes. So it shows like each track, you know, for each separate voice. Mm-hmm. And the visual, when you look at the sound wave of this interview, there's very little on like tracks 2 and 3, which was me and Patrick.
That's right.
There's a lot on track 1. Dave is a talker.
Oh, he is. It's like interviewing James Carville. You ask him one question, and 3 hours later, he's done talking to you about what you needed to know. That's right. It's really good.
It's always great. So thank you very much, Dave, for the time. It was really fun. Next time you're in town, we'd love to talk with you again.
Absolutely. And I want everyone out there who has not heard Marat to go and try to have the same discovery experience that Jim and I had.
Okay. So we'll give him a chance to hear one more song. Mm-hmm. Before we do that, please listen to Rock in the Suburbs with me, Jim Lenihan.
And me, Patrick Foster.
You can hear us on iTunes or Audio Boom or Stitcher or TuneIn. Mm-hmm. You can email us, rock@suburbspod.com. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter @suburbspod. You can call us and leave a message and tell us how much you like Mara or how much you like our show or whatever else you want to talk about,
yeah,
what you don't like it, whatever, you know.
Right. How wrong we are.
That's right. That number is 612-440-1984. One other thing we should mention, to get more information about Mara, whether you want to find out information about where they're touring,
yep,
or, you know, buy their records or anything like that, go to mara-usa.com.
Yes.
To do that. Okay. So, Patrick, what song should we play out with?
Why don't we play out with Walt Whitman Bridge? It's one of my favorite Mara songs, and I think anyone who's ever spent a little bit of time in Philly, even an hour, can relate to the song.
Cool. All right, we'll do that. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
So we'll talk to you tomorrow.
All right.
$7 to my name and 16 cigarettes. It's somehow I just ain't smoked yet. 2 shoelaces and 2 shoes. I should toss them on a telephone wire as a monument to my blues. I'm going down to get a coffee. It's gonna mean one less buck, but maybe 6 will bring me luck. Got a little shake I kept in the fridge. Gonna drink my bean and walk out and smoke it on the Walt Whitman Bridge. Far away from these winter streets, on a cloudless day, your memory.
My feelings couldn't possibly be hurt. I know that anymore. I mean, it's not even possible. I don't even think I have feelings.